Hello and welcome to People I Want to Be Friends with me, Andy Shepherd, Season 2. First of all, I want to say a massive thank you to everyone who listened to Season 1 and all the messages, all the DMs, all the tweets that you guys sent me saying how much you enjoyed it. I'm glad that so many of you found some inspiration and some entertainment in those conversations. And here we are, back for Season 2. And I feel like I might call these the isolation sessions because we are living in some abnormal times, to say the least. I know many of you will be at least social distancing and likely self-isolating at the moment. I'm here in London where we're kind of homebound. We are told we can go out for one form of exercise and to go grocery shopping. So those two things that used to be so run-of-the-mill and now daily highlight. I never thought queuing up to get into Tesco's would be such a high point of my day, but here we are. I hope you're all staying safe. I hope you're all looking after yourself, after your loved ones, and doing whatever you got to do to get through these very tough times. And I hope these conversations that I'll be sharing with you will maybe help pass some of the time. I've had a lot of fun recording these and speaking to these people, so I hope you have just as good a time having these in your ears. So this first conversation, it is with a man who has been instrumental in my career in recent years, and very much so over the last few months as I've prepared to sit in a seat that I currently am in, and that is the play-by-play commentary position on NXT UK. I am, of course, talking about Mr. Tom Phillips. He is a man who has done just about everything a commentator could do in WWE, from calling 205 Live, NXT, of course NXT UK, SmackDown, and the seat he currently sits in, which is on Monday Night Raw, one of the flagship shows of WWE. He is someone who behind the scenes helps many of the announced team in terms of improving, developing. I know he's done that for me, helping me prepare for the NXT UK play-by-play role, and he does that to so many people. He really gives back to everyone in WWE, and he's one of the best in the business. And in this conversation, we talk about his start in WWE, his approach to commentary. It's a real insight into how he works. And hopefully, if you've not heard a conversation with Tom before, you just heard him calling matches on WWE, you get a bit of an insight into his personality, and he's a great guy. He's a guy who, as I said, always gives back. If you like this conversation, please do like and subscribe to People I Want to Be Friends With. It all helps the cause. But for now, let's crack on and welcome Mr. Tom Phillips. Mr. Tom Phillips, thank you for joining me. It's a crazy time in the world right now, so thank you for taking this time out and having a chat. I want to start by talking about these the Raws and SmackDowns that we had recently. One thing that's impressed me, like, I know I work for the company, and obviously I'm a fan, but one thing that continues to impress me is how quickly WWE can come up with creative ideas to adapt to so many situations. How was it for you calling SmackDown in that kind of new setup?
I had a chance to call Monday Night Raw.
Sorry, Monday Night Raw.
So it was... certainly different because we were all kind of just acclimating to the new environment. For Byron and I, it was kind of comfortable in a way because we'd been in the PC for so long. Like, I remember the first day that it opened. I lived in Orlando for 3 years, so I was used to it. So walking in to work was very normal, whereas everybody else was kind of like, where's this, where's that? So like Byron and I were like, oh, great, you know, we're back in the PC, this is fine. No, it was a very interesting show because, you know, we're so attached to everything and we're so close to everything that, you know, we on the Monday that I called, we aired the 2020 Men's Royal Rumble match. You forget how many people that maybe watch Raw and SmackDown don't necessarily buy the pay-per-view or have a subscription to the network, and hopefully that's our job, is to try and get people to watch that stuff. So to throw that up there is a huge treat for a big part of our audience. So I thought that was really cool. And then, I mean, it was 316 day, and I was absolutely thrilled, as I'm sure it was obvious on TV, to take multiple stunners from Stone Cold Steve Austin and Becky Lynch. And then when we went off the air again from Stone Cold, it was great. And I got to drink a beer pretty much at work, which was great. So life wasn't so bad.
Look, so 316 day was a great day for you. Not such a good day for Byron Saxton.
No.
Have you spoken to him? How is he? Could he ever be a father?
He's been icing quite a bit. Steve got him a couple times. You know, it was pretty funny. No, when I saw how everything was developing, it was just kind of like, you know, it's like a dog when they see you're kind of like putting on, like you're grabbing the leash and you're grabbing the bags and you're putting your shoes on. It's kind of like, you know, you're steadily getting excited. You're kind of restrained and be like, okay, maybe this is going to happen. And then when it finally, he takes the stunner from Stone Cold, I couldn't have been happier. It was amazing.
Yeah, well, I'd be interested to see how he is this Monday. If he's still walking, if he's in a wheelchair, what kind of condition he's in.
Probably we sit a lot, so that might help him. Yeah,
it'd be interesting to see if he gets to walk at any point during that broadcast or if he is just sitting throughout. look, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but... behind the scenes, you're someone who helps so many of the announcers and the commentators. You kind of help groom them, help condition them, and get them to where they kind of need to be. And look, I'm someone who's very fortunately just had the privilege of calling NXT UK for the first time. Those are my first shows.
Thank you very much.
But it's because of you. You know, people like yourself and, of course, John Quaston and Vic Joseph have helped me. But, you know, over the last year, 18 months, it's so much down to you. Let's talk about your journey into commentary, because calling sports entertainment, pro wrestling, in one way, it's like calling other sports. In other ways, it's so different. There's so much more to it. I think it was Jonathan Coachman once said to one of our colleagues that if you can call sports entertainment, WWE, you can call any sport, because there's so many moving objects within how we work. And I think sometimes, I know I didn't, until I started looking into commentary and really trying to learn this craft, I didn't have a full appreciation of how much goes into it. So I want to talk to you about how you've got to where you are, because, you know, hey, you're hosting Monday Night Raw. There's now not a brand in WWE you haven't worked on. Of course, until I sat in that chair, you were the voice of our great nation.
Unless they bring Velocity and Sunday Night Heat back, that would be good. I completely agree with Coach's point that if you can call this, you can call anything, because what we do is so much based in emotion. And there's nothing else like it on the planet. And that conventional sports, granted, there are emotional moments, but for the most part, you're straight up and down, you know, sports play-by-play announcer. Yeah. And that's all well and good, and people make fabulous livings doing that. In WWE and in wrestling, you can't be beholden to a specific idea you may have had before that segment or that moment went down, because you just don't know how it's going to play out, because it's kind of like theater, and that, you know, the actor or actress might go out there with one emotion or thing in mind, and it doesn't necessarily land, or maybe it does land perfectly and it's so impactful. And that's kind of the nature of entertainment. And that's the beauty of what we are. And we're not shy about what we are. We're sports and we're entertainment. So to be at that intersection is really, really fascinating. For me, my journey was very, very different, because I never really imagined that I would be in the seat that I'm in today. It didn't seem like, when I was a kid, it wasn't like, oh, I'll just apply there someday. You know, like no one really like knows like the avenue in, like it takes you, you gotta know a guy or something like that. When I was a kid, I was a fan, I was playing the video games, and then went to high school, went to college, kind of fell out of love with things. And then once I graduated school, I found a job lead online. It was for WWE. And I was like, what? Like, I never would have fathomed it to just be as mainline as something like that.
Were you a fan of the product at that point? Or were you aware of it? Or had you watched it as a kid?
Yeah. I watched it as a kid. My parents were not big fans of wrestling because, you know, granted, I was born in 1989. So at the time that I'm really watching the show, it's, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. It's a little
bit
far
from PC.
It's a little different, yeah. Not PGTV. So my folks were not really that thrilled about it, which I can't blame them. And I would go down to the basement and I'd watch like Monday Night Raw in like one volume just so they couldn't hear me, all that stuff. And I play the video games a lot. No Mercy on Nintendo 64. I still have it. And I have WCW versus NWO Revenge. So I have played all those games for years. So that was kind of my vehicle to experience the product. And then, again, like I said, once I went to high school and college, I started, you know, obviously getting more into my academics. You start playing sports, chasing girls, all that good stuff. So, you know, you get a little sidetracked. And then after school, job lead comes up. And I was like, okay, you know, like my roommate at the time would convince me, he's like, do it, you'll mess up, it'll be funny, you know, whatever. So I applied. They had me up to Stanford, which was unbelievable. I went up there in June of 2012. I called a couple matches. I did a couple on cameras. You know how those things go where it's an audition for anything and you kind of walk away. I was like 50-50. I was like, some of it felt good, some of it felt terrible. And then that was June. And then September 2012, they offered me a contract opportunity. So I was like, floored. It was crazy.
When you call those matches, because again, calling sport, by the way, I was obviously doing a bit of research before we chatted. Of course, your Wikipedia page was the first stop. Is it true you played backgammon at high school?
Backgammon?
That's on your Wikipedia page, by the way, that you ran track and you ran track and field in high school and you played backgammon.
I love that that's on my Wikipedia.
That's there.
No, never played.
That's a fact.
I don't even know how to play backgammon.
What? I don't know. Wait, someone thought you played backgammon.
Is that the one with like the little, like they look like checker pieces, but like they're heavier?
I'll be honest with you, I don't know. I know the word. If it's on a board.
Well, it sounds very British, so I figured you'd know.
I feel like it's what some people play in the park. Like, you know, those guys who sit on the park benches, like playing stuff all day. That's something those guys would play. I didn't think it was something I could see you playing, if I'm completely honest.
No, I don't even know what it is. That's awesome. I got to check out my Wikipedia. I'm sure there's some great news on there.
It's full of some fun facts. What did you do at school? What was your sport at school?
I played football, American football, all that stuff.
It's not a ball. It's not even a ball. It's not spherical.
It's like a lime, you know. It's like
That's far from a ball. We'll have that in the conversation.
So I played football in high school. I ran track and field, so that was always fun. But yeah, I was a football fan from day one. I played pickup basketball. I played baseball sparingly. So did a bunch of different things, but was never like, I think like any kid, you have grand illusions that you're like, oh, I'm going to play, you know, professional sports. And then like quickly into high school when I realized I was made of glass and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And ultimately it was like, I want to stay close to sports. And when I was, I think a freshman or a sophomore in high school, I had broken my hand, so I couldn't play football during the season. So I asked the head coach if I could do PA announcements. So just kind of like the announcements to the stadium. By stadium, I mean bleachers that we had. So it was like, you know, all 10 people there and just kind of do the PA announcements. Like, oh, first down and 10, you know, pass incomplete. And I did that and I had entirely too much fun. I don't think we actually did a great job, but like I immediately was like, yep, I love this. I want to do something like this. And then I would watch stuff on TV in terms of play-by-play announcers. I was like, okay, you know, again, the delusions of youth where you're just kind of like, oh, I can do that. That's easy, you know, whatever. And then you like realize how hard it is and it's insane. So yeah, that was kind of the beginning.
So when you started at WWE, when you did calling the matches in your audition, how did you find it? Because again, it is different to other sports. You're not calling move for move. You're trying to get the story across. You're trying to help those guys. So when you first called a wrestling match, how did you find it?
It was really bizarre because I practiced a little bit at home before the audition. They were good enough to tell me what matches I was calling. So I did a little bit of research ahead of time on the characters because there were some people that I remembered very clearly, obviously. They were competing when I was a kid. Some of them were still around at that point. And then, of course, you know, who didn't know about Randy Orton, John Cena, Triple H, The Undertaker, the list goes on and on. And then there were some newer characters that I was like, oh, I have no idea who this is because I'm not, you know, terribly up to date on the product. But the second the job opportunity became aware, I started kind of watching the show and just trying to get up to speed. So it all came about very quickly. And then it felt very foreign because I knew to call moves. because I grew up playing the video games, and I would do the create a character. And you can go into create a character, and it's the two dummies doing stuff to each other. And doing that, where you're picking movesets for your created character, all the wonderful created characters I had, you learn the moves in a lot of ways. So that's kind of how I learned the moves, is like, oh, you're Mauro Ranallo calling Argentine backbreaker. I learned that through the video games. So I would go back and do that stuff as I was kind of adding to my, you know, my Rolodex, so to speak. So it evolved very quickly. And then when I finally got hired, the first match I ever called was with Jim Ross on NXT. I was still performing under my legal name at that point in time, which was, I was kind of confused because everybody pretty much had a ring name. So I was kind of like, oh, what's going on? And I had no idea what I was doing. Like, not a clue.
Were you play by play and Jim was color?
I think.
Or was it just sit there and call this match?
I think he was definitely probably doing play by play. And I was kind of just happy to be there ultimately. Like, they probably like told me, you're doing play-by-play. But yeah, I'm sure he was out there to actually call the show because I had no idea what I was doing. I made so many mistakes.
But that's a big thing. I mean, Jim Ross, I mean, if you look up and down the annals of pro wrestling history, Jim Ross is arguably one of the most iconic, some of his calls over the years. So this, and especially at that time. So to sit alongside him and call a match as your first match, that's got to be nerve-wracking.
Oh yeah, no, not that that wasn't daunting at all, you know. So that was crazy. And then of course it was 2012, 2013. So remember, NXT's in its infancy at this point, and not, you know, it'd been on the air since 2010. So at that point we were just beginning at Full Sail Live. So NXT itself was changing from the what many people remember as the reality show, the game show, so to speak, to the product that we largely know what it is today. So the evolution of the show was very, very much underway at that point. So I truly did not know what I was getting into. And yeah, it's definitely a crash course in a lot of ways.
Do you remember what the very first match was that you called?
You know what? I probably have it in my notes. I'm not even kidding. I have
hold on a second.
I have an iPad. When I turn it on, I have this old iPad that is literally about 7 years old and the battery is dead. I have the notes of every show I've ever called.
Wow.
On this iPad, because when I first started, Michael Cole recommended to me, he's like, hey, get yourself an iPad because you can stick it right next to the monitor that we have to look at. A lot of fans don't know about it, but we have a monitor that we're looking at because that's what happens on TV. So if I'm just staring at the ring, I'm just kind of like, oh, that's great. Now look at that happening. But it's not truly what's happening on your TV. I have to call what's happening on your TV. So I put the notes right next to the monitor. So it's just, you know, if I just glance over, I'm not completely looking down or away or something. So I have the notes from every match I've ever called. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'll dig it up at some point.
I will forever be able to say that Pretty Deadly versus Dan Maloney and Darice Gordon was the first match I ever called. that's going to stick in my mind for a while. When you walked away from those first tapings, how did you feel? Did you feel like this is something you could do, or you were like, oh man, this is a challenge?
I was kind of like, I had no barometer. I had no idea what I was doing. And I was so naive, Andy. I was like 23 years old and I had all these, you know, ideas of what I wanted to do and what I wanted to be versus how they thought they could use me, which was two very different things. And a lot of it, I was very stubborn and I was very naive. And I just kind of was like, oh, I'm just going to do this. And it's like, no, if you, and the phrase go into business for yourself, if you go into business for yourself, then you're disregarding the story that is being told by the people in the ring, by the countless people that are behind the camera. So I just had no idea what I was getting into, man. It was really, really wild. And it just took a lot of trial and more error than anything over years to figure it out.
So, I mean, look, you're someone who's helped me so much over the last couple of years. Who helped you? Who helped get you to where you're at?
Michael Cole, first and foremost. Michael Cole, very early on, was obviously producing NXT from day one for me. So he was really good about, you know, he understood how young I was and that I came in here, you know, just the formless piece of clay or whatever you want to call it, and pretty much was tough on me in a good way, in that he wasn't going to, you know, tell me, oh, you did this great, you know, get on the plane and go home, you know, because what good would that do? He would tell me, he was like, this was wrong, this was bad, you got to do this, you got to do that. And it took me a while to be able to hear that and be able to take constructive criticism. And Cole and I were just texting about this the other day, but like, you know, for him and the powers that be to stick with me now for 7.5 years through the stubborn early 20s and such, and all the hurdles I had overcome as a performer and just as a person and a professional, I'm so grateful. So, because he has seen everything over his 23 years, I think, now in the company. So he was really, really helpful to the point where he's like, I'm going to make sure you don't make the mistakes that I've made. And I'm going to make sure that you avoid maybe some of the habits that I have or whatever. You know, he has really helped me just be me. I think that's a natural thing for all of us as commentators, is that you look at the person ahead of you and it's like, oh, okay, well, obviously what they're doing is, you know, correct or what they want. So you try and duplicate it. And then it's like, great. Now maybe, you know, Andy Shepherd sounds like Vic Joseph, or he sounds like Mauro Ranallo or something like that. And it's like, great. You want to find you. And that doesn't happen immediately. And God bless Cole for just being patient with me for a long time.
Has there been a point where you sort of felt like that clicked? Was there a one moment where you're like, oh, maybe I have found myself now?
It took a while. I would say it took 4 or 5 years before something clicked. I don't even think it's truly like, oh, I got this figured out. Like, that's never the case with this place. No, I felt, let me back up. In November 2016, they put me on the four-man SmackDown, if you recall that.
Yeah, of course.
And that was a great opportunity for me, because at that point, SmackDown had just gone live within the last year or year and a half. So up until that point, everything I'd done was taped. So getting to sit there and to do the traffic portion of the show, what I mean by traffic to the people at home is the graphics, the B-roll, throw to packages, ads, things for different PR promotions that we have, to be able to sit there and just focus on that, because it's a huge part of what we do for Raw and SmackDown and now NXT. If you can't get that down, it doesn't matter if you can call a great match. You've got to be able to marry the two so that you can coordinate the show with the producers and make sure everything goes off without a hitch and it feels nice and clean. So if I didn't have that opportunity, and then eventually a couple months later, you know, they're like, hey, you're calling WrestleMania. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, I was able to marry the two things. So I'd learned in NXT how to call a match and how to understand, you know, moments and emotions, you know, from a basic standpoint. And then being able to marry that with, you know, the traffic and the coordination. Then going to WrestleMania, which I still was just nervous as all hell. And it really wasn't until maybe that summer or the following year that I really felt like, okay, I have a grasp on what we're doing, but by no means mastery.
Let's talk about WrestleMania, because it was WrestleMania 33 was your first?
Yeah, 2017 in Orlando.
Yeah. And you were, at that point, only the fifth person to do play-by-play at a WrestleMania. 33 WrestleManias, and you're the fifth. How did that feel? Because as you say, it was only a few months really before that you'd started doing live and doing, you know, something on that kind of scale. How was that experience?
It was insane. It was terrifying. That stat, which is not lost on me, and I'm flattered and humbled every time I hear it. Cole told me about maybe a half an hour before Mania started, and they were nice enough to tweet something. I was like, oh, you know, no pressure. You know, it's just, you know, Mr. McMahon.
What I need right now is more pressure. Give me some more.
Yeah, like Mr. McMahon, JR, Gorilla, Cole, myself. I was like, you're kidding me. So the kid in me would have been like, you know, oh, you're out of your mind. No, it was only a couple weeks before WrestleMania that things changed, and I had the opportunity to call it. And it was a cool moment because I was living in Orlando at the time, so it was kind of like right down the street. So it was this peculiar feeling. Like the day before, I was at my local barbershop, just kind of like, oh, okay, you know, like get my haircut and get ready for the weekend and stuff. And I was like, this should feel more, you know, nerve-wracking. And then, like, finally getting to the stadium, I was like, oh, my God. And, like, it's more so the production of everything and just driving home in your head, this is the pinnacle of wrestling, period. and to see the biggest personalities and the greatest in-ring performers ever all assembled in one place, and this whole spectacle that's going to go on around them, and then how much hinges on them, you know, tens of thousands of people watching them live, and then millions watching around the world. And there can just sometimes be two people in the center of the ring just making it all work. And then it's like, all you have to do on commentary is not mess it up. So it was nerve wracking. There were some crazy moments from that WrestleMania just in general that I got to call, but mostly I was going into it just being like, don't mess up. So hopefully I did that. And that's not for me to say.
Last year at WrestleMania in New York, that was my first WrestleMania. I'd wanted to go for so many years, and I've been to a lot of big sporting events. So I was like, this is going to be cool. But, you know, I've been to big things before. Oh, no. First of all, WrestleMania takes over the entire city. And also, just if someone is listening to this and hasn't been to a WrestleMania, it is a spectacle unlike anything else. Just walking backstage, just walking around the back, trying to get to, let's say, catering, was a 20-minute walk. And when you walk out into that arena, again, I've never felt anything like the energy, the production, the amount of people there, the energy. It's something on another level.
Yeah, it's a small army putting everything together, and it's a specialized group of people that many of the people that work for WWE from a crew standpoint have been there for decades. And if one of them is not, you know, there, to put somebody in their place is unfathomable, because it's such a difficult position to be in, and everybody's able to adapt at the drop of a hat, which is what makes the crew just so darn good. And then the production every year is just, it's bigger than it was the year before, and there's always something new that they add to make the show just that much more extravagant. So it's really an experience that, like, you know, even if you're not a wrestling fan, you know, I've had family members go and they're just like, this is unbelievable. Yeah. There's so many things to it that you can't even begin to describe all at once, that seeing WrestleMania live is once in a lifetime. It's really cool.
100%. So I want to rewind a second, because what you said earlier about when you stepped from NXT and you were doing, everything was pre-taped that you'd done before that, before you stepped into SmackDown. So obviously there's no secret, when we record NXT UK, we have a weekend of tapings. They're great shows. People come down and we record multiple TV shows. So it's all pre-recorded. Which do you find more challenging? Because my background before doing this, everything I've done is live sports. And with that, you kind of get carried along. The narrative of the night is it's unfolding in front of you. So you just get carried along with it. Whereas when you pre-tape stuff, the way you have to feel is a bit different, the way where you have to structure yourself. Which do you find more challenging?
I find the taped environment more challenging, just because I think there's this switch that goes off in a lot of broadcasters and performers' minds of live, in that there's no safety net. Yeah. So to be able to just go and be like, you know what, this is live, I got to treat it as such. And you do the same for a tape show, but there is still that element in the back of your head of like, if I fumble, if I miss a word, you know, technically we can go back and clean it up or something. And you don't want to rely on that ever. But you're human, and that's in the back of people's minds no matter what. The taped ones are difficult because you are thinking, you know, okay, this year's airs this week, and this airs the next week, and this airs the next week. So then you have to put yourself in the mind of the WWE fan who is maybe just getting to know NXT UK. And let's say that week is a major pay-per-view event. We've had NXT UK episodes air on the same day as pay-per-views. So it's like, oh, being cognizant that, hey, this might not be the first thing they watch today, or this might just be the beginning of their day of wrestling, so to speak. So just trying to keep in mind the totality of the WWE universe, which is no small task. It's tough. You got to put yourself in that environment, and sometimes you really have to give an effort that is above and beyond in those moments. And they can be long, as you know. They can be long days, but they're really fun at the end of the day. That's what I love about NXT UK.
How did you find your time on NXT UK? Because you were with us for 6 months or so, and the fan reaction to you was amazing. People loved you on that. And you were, I said it on the pre-show at TakeOver Blackpool too, you are the voice of our nation. How did you find the experience of calling this new brand?
No, you're very kind. Honestly, I was on the show for like 4 months. Okay. Like, I was on the show from October to mid-January, really. Like, March. Basically,
they're being broadcast until March.
I take that back. Everything that was airing, you're right. What we taped got us through March. But in terms of like physically being there for things like Takeover Blackpool, and then we did the taping in York, was my last date for that. It was so much fun because everybody on NXT UK is committed, period, top to bottom, behind the camera, in front of the camera. And everybody's just trying to get better, which is an amazing environment to be around. It is collaborative. It is pleasant, except for Flash Morgan Webster. He's the worst.
No one likes Flash. I don't know what's going on with him.
No, I love Flash. Everybody was just so nice. And to be able to go over there and work with a lot of talented people from Robbie Brookside, of course, Mr. William Regal, Dave Taylor, Johnny Moss, the list goes on and on. Matt Bloom, Shawn Michaels, obviously, is taking a hand in NXT UK. It's super cool. And then to get to see, for instance, when you were doing ring announcing, to see you perform live was so cool because I'd seen on TV like, oh, yeah, he's really good. But then to see you do something with the live crowd, it's completely different. And I was like, damn, this is awesome. And to work with Nigel again, Nigel and I, like once a year, get to cross paths and call something. And it's just so pleasant. I worked with Aiden English as well, and I think the world of Aiden as a performer. So it just gave me the opportunity to work with so many people that I would love to do that show all the time. But that being said, I'm thrilled that we have an all British announce team now. That is something that I think is so special for the brand. And to see you go from, you know, January 2017 to now 2020, and you're the voice of the show. Couldn't have written a better story, in my opinion.
And I wouldn't be here without you. I want to get back to how we kind of first met. So it's true. It's 100% true. So I got in touch with WWE after I was doing some producing, making some content for WWE. Met Kasama, who's one of your producers. Yep. She put me in touch, gave me an email address. I sent my reel through and, you know, a kind of cycle of things happening. I remember getting an email from you. And again, you know, I watched the product. I am a huge fan of the product. I remember getting this email from you, Tom Phillips, and thinking, is this another Tom Phillips? Because surely this is not Tom Phillips who is on WWE TV. But as you're
being, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you're, I think we spoke for maybe 6 months and you sort of, you know, we went back and forward and we were actually speaking about this, I think, a few weeks ago. When I was put in the ring for ring announcing at the first United Kingdom Championship tournament, you weren't aware. I think I kind of blagged it. I don't think anyone was aware that I'd never done ring announcing before.
Yeah, it was completely unbeknownst to me. We had spoken about, you know, you had a lot of broadcasting experience. Obviously, you did a lot with mixed martial arts and a variety of different things. So I was like, oh, okay, like he understands live. He understands combat sports. So obviously in the vein of what we do at WWE. So I was like, oh, okay, he'd be a good fit as a broadcaster. Specifically, what role? Didn't really have much, you know, input on that at the time. It was just kind of like, oh, okay, here's a person you guys should take a look at. And yeah, we talked about that and you're like, oh yeah, no, when I got in the ring for rehearsals in Blackpool was the first time you'd ever tried it. And it was crazy because when I turned on the TV to watch the first tournament, you'd have never known that. He did a fantastic job. So I was like, oh, you know, like, but I didn't think about that at home. I was just kind of like, oh yeah, of course it worked out. Andy's very talented. And then to find out years later, I was like, oh no, this could have been so bad.
I'll tell you something, the day before, because before that first UK tournament, first of all, just thinking back now, the gamble that everyone took on that first United Kingdom Championship tournament was huge because it was live. And there was so many talent on there. Of course, today we know some incredible talent. Pete Dunne, Trent Seven, Tyler Bate. So many people have come out of that tournament. But also, no one really had done live, especially on that scale at that point. And so we had a day before to kind of block through entrances and stuff and just, you know, get the lights on, that kind of stuff. And I remember them putting me in the ring and being, oh, okay, Andy, do some ring announcements. Again, never done any ring announcing. And so I remember having a conversation with Cole beforehand. He was like, oh, you know, this is not about your personality. This is about you announcing the guys. So I thought, okay, I've got to be quite, you know, I'll do what I think a ring announcer does, which is just shout some names. And I remember doing the rehearsals and being so stiff. Like, you couldn't move me. Like, you know, a Gale Force wind could have come by and I'd still be standing because I was that stiff. And, you know, fortunately, the guys, everyone was there, all the producers, you know, were like, hey, just relax, just be you.
Yeah.
And I came back the next day and managed to make some improvements. But the day before, wow, that wasn't there. That wasn't there. And unfortunately, you know, I got to do that for, you know, the best part of 3 years. And I think a lot of people don't, when they watch TV, they don't see what a ring announcer does. They see them announcing the competitors and stuff like that. But actually, it's one of the best jobs going. Because in between the matches, you get to have so much fun with the crowd. And it's, yeah, it's, did you ever do ring announcing? Did you ever get in there?
Sparingly at live events in the United States, a lot of them for the NXT Florida shows and then for the NXT road shows. So those were so much fun just because, you know, you never know what the night is going to be like. You never know how the crowd is going to react necessarily. And I've said to you, one of the best feelings in wrestling for any performer is to be the ring announcer in the main event of a pay-per-view, takeover, whatever you want to call it. And to do what we refer to as old school introductions or championship introductions, and to have the champion and the challenger either side of you, and just to have the audience in the palm of your hand and to be able to deliver all that information with power in your voice and authority is one of the coolest things in the world. So to be in that ring in that moment is awesome. And I believe at the moment, you know, we're in a golden age of ring announcers in WWE, in that you've got Greg Hamilton holding things down on SmackDown, who I think has an amazing career ahead of him already. He's done some magnificent things. Mike Rome is excellent on Monday Night Raw. Alicia Taylor is fantastic on NXT and has only been in the company for a touch over a year, which is insane how good she is.
Yeah.
And by the way, no one else, in my opinion, should ever ring announce TakeOver War Games other than
Alicia my Taylor. Word, yeah.
Because her War Games announcement scared the life out of me to the point where I was like, all right, yeah, let's do this match. You know, it was great. And then obviously up until recently, you were the ring announcer for NXT UK. And I was like, man, back in the day, it was, you know, just one ring announcer for everything. Whether it's Howard Finkel, Tony Chimmel, Lillian Garcia, like the list goes on and on. And now it's like we were at a point where we have four that were just lights out. And it is a tough job because you have to be able to be ready at a moment's notice. You have to deliver. It's something that a lot of people just forget about is ambient noise sometimes in the course of a broadcast. But there's a reason we as play-by-play and color commentators lay out for you guys to get in, because your announcement lives forever. In the video packages that come up at the end of the day, the ring announcement for when Walter wins the United Kingdom Championship, when Tyler Bate won in the first tournament, that ring announcement lives forever. And that is not a small opportunity. That is something that if you whiff, it's crushing. But if you nail it, it's something that's unforgettable.
Actually, again, you know, my background is broadcasting, so I'm used to doing links and that kind of stuff. But actually, the pressure and the nerves of doing a championship ring announcement are probably more than doing, you know, hosting a live show and having to control all that, because you have to say, there's only certain words you can say. If you're doing a broadcast, you've got to get from A to B. If you stumble on a word or go the wrong way, you can pull yourself back. Whereas right. A ring announcement, you've got to say verbatim these mm-hmm. words. And so actually that's some of the most nervous the wrong words, because I enjoy it so much. But yeah, the pressure in those moments is higher than a lot of things.
It's one of the few things in wrestling that in 60 years has not really changed much, and that ring announcing, the styles have changed a little bit, but in terms of, to your point, the words have not changed, the verbiage has not changed very much in decades. So to take that, and to your point, once the train is on the tracks, it's moving. So you got to stay with it. It's really challenging, and we're fortunate to have as many good people as we do.
What's a match that stands out to you as one of your favorite that you've called?
Oh gosh, Kofi Kingston winning at WrestleMania last year was unbelievable. What an honor it was to call that, because that was just special for people all over the world, and then especially important for a lot of people that work for us and know Kofi, and just to see one of the good guys truly, you know, overcome and get to that moment. Getting a call Trish Stratus versus Charlotte Flair last year at SummerSlam was super cool. What an honor that was. One of my favorite moments to this day, NXT TakeOver Dallas, I forget the year, but Sami Zayn versus Shinsuke Nakamura. Sami Zayn's last match in NXT and Shinsuke Nakamura's first appearance in WWE and his first match in NXT. Corey Graves is so geeked up when Shinsuke was doing his entrance, he's like grabbing my arm and he's freaking out. And we may have spoken for 40%, 50% of that match because the crowd was so loud and they were chanting the whole time. Graves and I just, when that happens, you don't have to do anything because they're the soundtrack. They're the narrators. You don't have to do anything. And it was just unbelievable. So I'm fortunate I've had a bunch of situations like that. And then Byron Saxton getting stunned by Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's funny.
that moment will live. That moment will live forever.
You know what's a random one? Is Usos versus Fashion Police, Breezango. Do you remember the match they had? I forget what pay-per-view it was. Or maybe it was on SmackDown. It was with the SmackDown tag team titles when Breeze was dressed up as a janitor and then an old woman. Do you remember that match? I'm sure
vaguely. I'm not sure where it was. I remember the images in my head. I don't think it'll ever be removed.
It was one of the funniest matches I've ever called in my life, or one of the funniest WWE segments I've ever seen in my life. But I always remember it because the Usos ripped the dress off of Tyler Breeze and then threw it, and it got caught on JBL's head, and we were just dying laughing. I almost forgot about that, but that was one of the funniest instances I've ever seen. It was great.
Some of my favorite moments of you guys on commentary is when you're cracking up. You know, I know I've messaged you a number of times when I've seen you guys broadcasting, especially when you've been with Graves, and there's something that just cracks you guys up, and you can hear you guys corpsing. And I don't know, for me as a viewer, as a fan, I love those moments because it shows just how much you guys are into it.
Yeah, man, WWE is like the only thing in the world where as a broadcaster, you can completely collapse on headset or on live TV and it works. You know, it's just part of the moment. One of the best things that I've gotten to experience, and this is random, like I can name 100 instances with Byron and Graves and myself having been on the air and just laughing hysterically. But one that jumps out, we had a SmackDown a while ago where we had an Arby's commercial read, like an ad read for them, and many people know this is not an ad for Arby's, by the way, but at the same time their ad is, you know, we have the meats, and it's, I believe it's Ving Rhames who does the voiceover for it, so it's that very deep bass in his voice, you know. So I get this early in the day, as I always do, and I'm going through all the ad reads. I'm like, oh my god, this is great. So I run over to Graves. I was like, Graves, you're doing this, because it would sound weird for me to completely go out of character and do this big, loud announcement. So we're in the commercial break and we number everything on our sheets. So it's like, okay, number 51 is this person's entrance. Number 52 is Arby's. Graves, you have that. And Byron, you're going to pick up in 53. And Byron looks at me like, okay, like I never tell him like right after this. Normally it's me speaking immediately after. So he's like, okay, so hand it to Graves. Get to the moment, Graves goes, Arby's, we have the meats. And I go face down on the desk because I told him, I was like, you won't do it. He's like, I'll absolutely do it. Like, there was not even a question. And Graves goes down, I go down. Byron's looking at us like, oh my God, you idiot. And he starts talking and takes it away. And we've had umpteen other ones around that. So it's the great thing is like, it's never the same day twice. And you can go out there and you just laugh and have fun with your friends at the end of the day. That's when it's really special.
What's your, again, this is from my point of view, I'm green as grass in commentary, you know, trying to pick up and learn this skill. What's your mindset when you're going into matches? Is it now something that you can almost call an autopilot, or what's your sort of thought process going into matches?
No, definitely not autopilot, but it's certainly something where I'm just trying to read and react, because like I said before, when we were talking about, you know, you can't be beholden to certain ideas you have before you come on the air. It's cool to have a line in your head or hope that things go a certain way, that maybe you can bring up a stat or a moment in history that is relevant. But depending on how the match goes and how the moments play out, and sometimes, you know, the construct of our live shows, timing is very important for our segment. So you may have less time than you thought. You may have more time than you thought. So if I'm beholden to an idea I had before the segment started, I may set myself up to really make something clunky or awkward, or set up one of my partners for something that's a little bit rough. So my goal when I go in is just to read and react and take what the show gives me, which I know is kind of a sports analogy, but you know, if somebody's giving you a great facial expression, and I avoid that. I'm like, the easiest thing in the world is to marry the pictures on the screen with your thoughts or vice versa. And it sounds easier said than done. It's just very difficult to kind of take that and then articulate it in very quickly. So my goal when I go on the air is just period, just read and react and then go from there. If I'm able to get in anything specific, I do all that prep earlier in the day or the day before if I'm lucky. And if I can bring that stuff up, awesome. I usually have a ton of notes for pay-per-views especially, and I get to a fraction of them because I normally just go out on the air and just try and, you know, react in the moment.
If the 12-year-old kid that was playing the N64 games could see what you're doing now, what do you think he would think?
And be like, really? Like, oh, yeah, you know, like, it's so bizarre because I just never thought I would wind up here. And I never thought the avenue to WWE would be there. And then once I got here, you know, I always believed that WWE was going to give me a lot of opportunities to, you know, succeed and to fail. And I've done both, and it's tough. But the one thing that's really special to me right now is to be able to go out and say, welcome to Monday Night Raw. I don't take that lightly. And it's kind of like you talked about the people who preceded me at WrestleManias. The people who preceded me in that chair on Monday Night Raw is a who's who. And if you're going to sit in that chair, you need to live up to that legacy. So in order to go out there and say those words, it's so, so special to me that I put a lot of pressure on myself to live up to that. So it's not easy, but it's fun at the end of the day, man.
And, you know, if someone's looking at you and thinking, hey, I want to be the next Tom Phillips, what advice would you give, like, young kids or anyone who wants to try and get into this crazy world?
I would say just try a little of everything before doing this, because the point you brought up about what Coachman said earlier is that there's nothing else like this. When I applied to this, they told me, do not send tape of you calling basketball or football or something like that. So I was like, okay, like, this obviously isn't going to cut it in terms of calling these different sports. Even though those gave me a little bit of experience coming into doing what I'm doing now, just no preparation for it. But I think the important thing for anybody that wants to get into broadcasting, not just wrestling, but broadcasting, is try everything. If you're in school, get into an internship program, find out what you like, find out what you don't like. I did plenty of internships where I was like, I didn't like this, but then I did other ones where I was like, no, this was fun, this is what I like. And it, you know, kind of clarified my path as things went forward. And then if you're somebody who's in love with wrestling and you want to get into wrestling, just understanding how different WWE is from every other type of wrestling product on the world, in the world. So whatever you see on your local independent wrestling show, if there is commentary on it or if there is announcing, it's usually done very differently here because we just have a different way of doing things. So it's just being prepared for change, being prepared to adapt. And I learned that lesson the hard way at a very young age. And it took me a long time to get to where I am today. And, you know, I'm just beginning, really, you know, like kind of like we talked about. It's like, this is just the beginning in all this. Like, I'm flattered to be where I am, but by no means can I rest on my laurels of what I'm doing. So it's a crazy world, man.
Is one of the prerequisites to be a WWE announcer to have a square face and a beard? Because...
Yeah. Yeah, I think when we were when we first brought you on, like Mike Rome and I were working for the company, and like Mike grew his beard out and I had my beard already, and it was just kind of like, oh, I was like, well, we brought this other guy on, Andy, and we were both like, damn it, he's way better looking than both of us. This is brutal. And then, like, you came to a TV, I think, in London or something like that. And I was like, I can't be next to this guy. I look like crap next to this guy. This is terrible. So, it's part of it, I guess. Gray's a good-looking guy. We got a lot of good-looking people on WWE commentary.
So I don't think you, me, or Mike Rome have ever been in a room together at the same time. So there might only be two of us. I mean, we've all got pretty much the same face.
Yeah, the world might implode if we're all in the same broadcast, because, like, who would know who's who, you know? It'd be very challenging.
Just one action figure for all of us. It's all the same. Yeah.
I'll take one action figure at this point. That'd be great.
It's only a matter of time. Mr. Phillips, thank you so much. Look forward to watching your broadcast going forward. You're bringing so much to this. And just for me, thank you so much, because I wouldn't be, you know, where I am. I wouldn't be in the company without you. I certainly wouldn't be getting to sit in the seat I have been for the last couple of weeks without your help. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me on. And seriously, you earned everything you got and keep kicking butt on NXT UK. So I wish I could be there to experience it with you, but I'm watching as a fan, man. So keep it up. Thanks, brother.
Tom Phillips, I'm sure you'll agree, what a guy, one of the best in the business. I hope that gave you an insight into how he works, how commentary works, his approach, and also just, you know, what kind of guy he is. If you enjoyed that, please remember to like and subscribe, People I Want to Be Friends With. We'll be back soon in your ears, but for now, thank you and stay safe.